Welcome to another Biology on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stouter. Welcome you to beautiful Dania Beach today. It's an overcast day. A few seagulls hanging around. It's a good day to talk about protein synthesis. Now, when we think of the word synthesis, just like we talked about photosynthesis, we know we're going to be putting things together. In this case, we're going to be putting together proteins. Now, if we take a protein and look at it, we'll see that a protein is going to be really composed of amino acids. So amino acids are going to be our primary components of our proteins. So therefore, when we look at protein synthesis, we're going to be looking at putting together a bunch of amino acids. So this is really going to be a talk on how your body puts together amino acids, really how it puts together you. Because if you cut yourself or if there's some cells in your body that need to be renewed, it's going to be all happening through protein synthesis. So it's an important process. It keeps us alive. So let's talk about this important process. First of all, let's talk about how proteins are made. DNA, as you know, is deoxyribonucleic acid. And the name nucleic tells us that it's going to be housed in the nucleus. And it never leaves the nucleus. It's going to stay there. It's going to be housed there. And because of that, we have to sort of get the information. It's like a library. That's what really DNA is. It's a library of information stored there in the nucleus, in the DNA. And it can only be copied. It cannot be allowed to get out. And this is done by messenger RNA. Messenger RNA will copy DNA. And then protein is created by this pathway. You got DNA going to RNA, going to protein. So DNA gets read by RNA, and then RNA then is going to create protein. And this is called the central dogma, because it describes the key used by your cells to express their genes. So it's a very, very important thing. It's so important that scientists call it a dogma. And a dogma is traditionally known to be in religious circles. A dogma would be something that we would be required as the faithful to believe. And so, being a scientist, you usually don't use terms that are going to be in the religious realm, because most scientists, I don't know most, but some scientists would certainly say that religion is unscientific, that religion doesn't really have the kind of scrutiny, or the religious principles don't have the kind of scrutiny that a scientific opinion or a scientific theory would have. So to use a word such as dogma, which is, as I've said, traditionally in the religious realm, it's interesting that they would go to that length. This is how much they believe, if you will, in this particular, as they say, dogma. And even though belief is not a big quality of true scientist either, it still is interesting that this is so emotionally charged, I guess, that they would call it a central dogma. It's very interesting. But because of this, then we have the central dogma, and that's going to be describing the key that your cell uses to express its genes. And genes control the production of what? You should know this. Yes. Genes control the production of proteins. So when we look at the central dogma, we see it has two major components. They're going to be transcription and also translation. Now these are the processes that are going to be central, if you will, to the central dogma. And transcription is going to be described at length, but for now we can say that's when DNA meets RNA. And translation is going to be where RNA meets tRNA. And we'll talk more about that later. But remember that transcription comes first. Translation comes after. So both words contain trans. So if we just think of taking out the word trans in both words, and then we're left with scription and lation. And as we see, the C in scription is going to be before the L in lation in the alphabet. So therefore, in our minds, we can remember that transcription comes before translation. So let's look at DNA and RNA. Now, we know that deoxyribonucleic acid has a deoxyribose as its sugar. So that's why we call it deoxyribose nucleic acid. And we talked about this a little bit. We'll talk about it more in depth. And deoxyribonucleic acid is going to be the sugar of DNA, but the sugar of RNA is going to be also called a nucleic acid, and it has not a deoxyribose, but it has a ribose as its sugar. So we call it ribonucleic acid. So RNA has ribose as its sugar, so we call it ribonucleic acid. DNA is also structured as a double helix. Remember that we had the structure of one staircase going next to another staircase. That was a double helix. Whereas RNA is just a single helix, so it's just one staircase. So that's a big distinction between the two. Also, DNA has, as its bases, GCAT. So we have guanine, cytosine, adenine, and thymine. Those are its bases. It's four complementary bases. But RNA is distinct because RNA does not have thymine. RNA has uracil instead. So when we have DNA having GCAT, we have RNA really having jukau. So when we look at DNA and RNA, we see that we have the differences, and they're going to be structural differences. As we said, DNA is going to have a double helix. The RNA is going to have a single helix. Also, when we look at the sugar, we see that DNA is going to be lacking in oxygen, whereas RNA will not be lacking in oxygen. So we can call RNA ribose, and we'll call the DNA, or the deoxyribose, because it has deoxy, it has no oxygen. And then also we look at the bases, going from GCAT to GCAU. So there are three types of RNA. We have messenger RNA, and we designate these different types of RNA with a small letter before the big RNA. So we have a capital RNA with a small letter just before. So in the case of messenger RNA, we write it with a small m and then a big RNA. We also have ribosomal RNA, or small r, big RNA. And we also have transfer RNA, small t, big RNA. So when we look at these three types of RNA, they're each going to have their different function. And messenger RNA looks like a single ribbon, a single helix. Three bases attached to it are called a codon. So we'll have three bases. They could be any of the RNA bases. We could have G, C, A, or U. And they're going to be attached to the messenger RNA. And that is going to be called a codon. We'll talk more about this later. But for now, you know that the codon is going to be on messenger RNA. Now, ribosomal RNA, or small r, big RNA, this is going to be where there's two proteins combined together. It looks like a fist with the other hand wrapping around it. Now, rRNA, ribosomal RNA, is also called ribosomes. Remember when we talked about the cell, we talked about the rough ER. And we said the reason that the rough ER was rough was because it has ribosomes. So that was, at that time, that was really what we meant, that they were ribosomes, and also that they also have another name, and that's small r, big RNA. And another name, ribosomal RNA. So you got ribosome, ribosomal RNA, and also small r, big RNA. Now, mostly, small r and big RNA doesn't do much in this whole process of protein synthesis. Yeah, but we'll explain that. The big players are going to be messenger RNA and also tRNA. By big player, I mean the most active. Now, what is tRNA? tRNA is called transfer RNA. And transfer RNA is going to be true to its name. It's going to transfer the amino acids so that they can get together and create a protein. So it's really a transferring agent, if you will. So tRNA looks like a big T. That's probably why they call it tRNA, I don't know. With three bases on it, called an anticodon. Now when we look at messenger RNA, we said that it has codes on it, three bases. We call that a codon. So opposite to that would be what we would consider an anticodon. So we have a codon and an anticodon. So the anticodon is going to be on tRNA, and the codon is going to be on messenger RNA. So think of the T as an anti, A-N-T, being on transfer RNA. It's a way to remember that. Now let's look at the process of transcription. Remember, this is the first process because it has the big C in it. And that comes before L in translation in the alphabet. So transcription occurs in the nucleus. Messenger RNA transcribes DNA into its own code. So what would be the code? Well, remember, DNA has GCAT. Messenger RNA doesn't have the T. It has the U instead. So that's how it's going to be transcribing DNA. So messenger RNA then takes its information to the rough ER where translation takes place. So what we have is a DNA inside of our nucleus that needs to be read. And it needs to be read by the messenger RNA. So the DNA code for thymine is replaced in the RNA code with uracil. So messenger RNA transcribes DNA's G to a C, DNA's C to a G, DNA's T to an A. Remember that messenger RNA still has an A. But the DNA's A is going to be transcribed as a U. So in RNA, the T, or thymine, is replaced by the U. So what I'd like you to do is go over that sequence and see how that's true. Whatever the letter is, you're going to be getting the complementary letter. So when we look at DNA's code, like for D, the messenger RNA would get the complementary code, which would be C. So just go through that in your mind and just see how that works. It'll be much clearer to you once you just go over the logic of it. It is very logical. Now, once we get into translation, now this is going to be occurring in the cytoplasm. The cytoplasm, as you remember, is going to be the fluid inside of the cell. That's where translation is going to be occurring. So we have messenger RNA meeting DNA in the nucleus, and now messenger RNA is going to leave that nucleus and then go into the cytoplasm. So messenger RNA takes the message from DNA with its own code. Remember, this is the codon. Takes it to the rough ER, or the ribosome, or the small r, big RNA, on the rough ER. And tRNA carries an amino acid to the rough ER, to the ribosome, in the sequence that the messenger RNA dictates. So in translation, a perfect protein is formed from the original instructions from DNA. So DNA is read by messenger RNA. It goes then to ribosomal RNA, and then the tRNA joins the amino acids together, creating a protein. Okay. Now, the process is going to go in messenger RNA to a codon. And that codon then is going to meet the transfer RNA's anticodon. Together, these are going to be bringing in a specific amino acid. Like, for instance, let's say that we have DNA, and DNA has a T, T, and a C. Remember, they come in letters of three letters. Okay, so we have three letters, which is going to code for one amino acid. So it's T, T, and C. Now, that's DNA's code, T, T, C. Now, messenger RNA has to now transcribe that. Very good. Must transcribe it into its own code. Its own code then for the T is going to be an A. Its own code for the other T is going to be an A. And for the last C, it's going to be a G. See how that just works? So AAG is now the new codon. And it got that from DNA. The codon will dictate what kind of amino acid there's going to be. So the codon for AAG is the amino acid lysine. The codon for UCA is serine. The code for GUG, the codon, GUC, is going to be valine. So there you have three different amino acids, and if the DNA has dictated, then the codon is going to be such, and therefore the amino acid is going to follow. So this just gives you a general example on how this basically works. So when we look at codons and anticodons, we see that the messenger RNA is going to have the codon, which is a code on it. Transfer RNA is going to have an anticodon. It's going to be messenger RNA's codon. And of course, remember that the T in tRNA stands for anticodon. Now ask this question. The anticodon is the sequence of nucleotide bases on what? And you would say transfer RNA. Then we ask, why is thymine missing? And you say, because DNA doesn't have thymine, it has what instead? And your answer would be uracil. Very good. All codons and anticodons are three letters long. So the language of the genetic code consists of words that are three letters long. Now at this point, I'd like to discuss a little bit about the DNA. Now as we mentioned, DNA is going to have all of the information in the whole body. So I ask the question, why is that? Now some people that I ask about this, and I say, do you think that all your cells has all the information for your whole body? Let me use the example. Do you think that if you were to take one cell from your earlobe, would that one cell from your earlobe have all the information for your whole body? And some people say yes, some people say no. But the truth is that it does. Your cheek cell has all the information for the whole body because it has all the DNA. Now my next question is, why is that? And some people will say, well, that's because that's the way God made it. And that's not a good enough answer. That's because that's the way it is. And that's not a good answer. While all those are true, it's not a good answer. Why is it that our cells have all the DNA in them? It's because we started off as one cell. Remember, ma met pa, sperm met egg, and the sperm and the egg came together and created one cell. That one cell now has 46 chromosomes. It used to have, that sperm had 23 and the egg had 23. They came together to create one cell of 46 chromosomes. That one cell then had to divide. It divided into two cells of 46 chromosomes, then into four, then into eight, then into 16. It kept going on and on. So the reason that all of our cells has all the genetic information needed to create the whole body is because it started off with what? One cell, exactly. Now there are some exceptions to this rule, like for instance red blood cells. Mature red blood cells do not have a nucleus. That's because they need to carry oxygen. So that's one exception. But all of our other cells are going to have the full nucleus in there. So I just want to make that clear. You know, that's some of what happens. Now, my next question of this is this. If it is true that each of our cells, your cheek cell for instance, has all of the DNA that's needed to create your whole body, why is it that when you cut yourself on your cheek, that only your cheek cell will renew itself? Why, it's got the information, doesn't it? why wouldn't it like put a ear on your cheek? Or put a nose on your cheek? Because it has that information, doesn't it? We just discussed that it has all the information needed to make the whole body. Well, the answer is that your body will not allow that to happen. The cell is programmed only to allow for the reading by messenger RNA of the DNA of only the sequence of nucleotide bases that are going to make that particular cell again. So cells are limited on how they can access the information that is inside of them. So your nose cell only makes nose cells, even though it has ear cells, it has toe cells, it has hair cells, it has tooth cells, it has bone cells, it has muscle cells, it has all these different cells, the capability of doing that, it's all there, right? But cells are limited, they can only read their own code for to make their own cell. So when we look at this sequence and we say that messenger RNA is reading DNA, be aware that it's only going to read the DNA that's appropriate for that cell. So we don't get a nose sprouting out from our ear or an ear sprouting out from our cheek. We have those cells limited only to that much information. Just wanted to give you that as an interesting side note. When we look at the process still in the process of this translation, we can sort of picture how the codon will fit right with the anticodon. And that's a good thing to picture. Now, note that you can have a chart of all of the amino acids with their corresponding codons. So if you look at a chart, you'll see that inside of the chart is going to be our major RNA nucleotides, and they're going to be G, C, A, and U. And that those three are going to be correlated with another set of the same. And that's going to be correlated with another set, because remember that each three-letter code codes for one amino acid. So we need three letters. Now it's interesting, though, that, like for instance with valine, valine is G, U, G, but it's also G-U-A, it's also G-U-C, it's also G-U-U. So it's the G and the U that really dictates that you're going to get valine. The third letter is sort of an extra sort of fail-safe thing. So if you have a G-U, you know you're going to get valine. But how about if you have an A-U? An A-U is... And if you have an AUG, that codes for methionine. But if you have an AUA, you're not going to methionine, you're going for isoleucine. So sometimes we have that third letter being important in determining what amino acid it is, and sometimes it's not important. Such as in the case of valine, it's really not that important. But in the case of methionine, it is. So the AUG is a code for methionine. It's also a code that is a start codon. It is the start codon. This start codon tells the cell when to make its protein. It starts protein synthesis. So, but here's the question. If methionine is both if AUG is both a code for methionine and also a code for starting, how does the cell know when it's methionine or when it's supposed to be a start codon? And one of the logical things you would say is, well, maybe it's in the beginning. If it's in the beginning, the body knows it's a start. And if it's in the middle, it knows it's a methionine. That'd be a good guess. But the answer to that question is that we don't know. And one day we might, but now we don't know. We don't know how it's determined. Because sometimes you can have a string, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, you can have a string of amino acids, or amino acid codes, string of codons, and there may be some area where you don't really know where to start. So that's really not the answer, but AUG is our start codon. Now this is easy to remember, because AUG is when we start school, which is when? Yes, August. There you go. So we also have a stop codon, and that's going to be UGA. UGA is one stop codon. We have a number of them, but this is one stop codon. And UGA is going to be that stop codon. So just think of, that's when we start school, it was in August, and if someone were to, like, be strangled, they, of course, would say, "Yeg!" So that would be a stop codon. So let's talk about a protein creation summary. We have transcription. It goes to translation. It goes to protein creation. The bond that forms between the adjacent amino acids of a protein is called a what bond? So two amino acids come together, we call it what bond? And that's a peptide bond. Now, transcription is when DNA is read by messenger RNA. That's our first process, you remember. And it transcribes the DNA information into RNA code, creating a codon. Translation is when messenger RNA is read by tRNA, and a protein is created. We call this process translation. So, next time we're going to get more into this. We're going to get into the details of translation. And for now, I'm Dr. Leo Stauder, and thank you for listening. This is Biology on the Beach. We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.